Hi there, it's Ross here from Football DNA, and I'm delighted to be joined by Fiona Wilson, who's player care mentor at Fulham Football Club and also a senior lecturer at St Mary's University too. Fiona, welcome on board. Thanks for joining us. And today we're going to be looking at really kind of the well-being of young children and getting a better understanding of this lockdown period and the impact that that's had on them. But also having a bit of a better understanding around emotional-led learning and emotional-led teaching. So I suppose, Fiona, if you want to just give everyone a bit of an insight into your journey and how you've got to where you are now, really, that'd be great.
Thank you for inviting me along today. The reason I sort of ended up where I am is I sort of went into teaching 20 years ago. I ran a centre for young people who had emotional, social, behaviour difficulties, kind of before we knew what that was. A lot of the things that were going on now that we didn't have the sort of terminology for. And because of that, we were kind of doing something in the dark and had to sort of find our way through it. In that, we realised that anger was a big issue. So myself and all my staff went on anger management training. Out of that, we realised that emotions were really underpinning the things that were going on for our learners, a lot of whom, they'd all been excluded from school, but had had really difficult lives. And then from that, my whole career then has been about trying to help those kind of young people. So trying to help young people who perhaps become disengaged. And I have to be honest, early on, I thought if I can get sports people to talk about this kind of stuff, then these young people might listen. And just, I guess, from having that in my mind, and we had a football team as well in our centre and things, and we even once played the police, and it was not a nice game. There was a lot of tackling going on both sides. It was kind of sort of how can we stop these young people, a lot of whom were also going into prison and things. So it was sort of from that. And then I always knew sport was really important. I wanted to sort of influence the way that people who work with young people do that so that they were aware of the whole child and the whole young person. And that's where I've gone into teacher training at St Mary's, where I'm really incredibly lucky to be able to have a voice that helps those sort of trainees think about emotions and think about the young person. And through that and the research that I've done, I've been really lucky to work at Fulham for the last sort of 3 years as a player care mentor working with the academy teams. I sort of in all of that time as well, I do quite a lot of work around mental health. So I'm a mental health first aider, but I'm also I've delivered at the Mental Wealth Festival and things like that, and trying to sort of promote that kind of well-being. So,
wow, yeah, that's fantastic and a great intro. And I suppose probably now where we are compared to maybe when you first started, there's been a massive change in the way in which we're now dealing with young people and having a better understanding of how to support young people around their emotions and well-being.
It is a huge shift, but I think we're still in the middle. And I'll talk about this idea of change quite a lot, I think, this morning. And there's a model of change. I was talking to the boys about it this week in a Zoom session. And that is where it's Lewin's model of change. And you're an ice cube. So say it's a cube. And then we sort of melt and then we become another shape. And as you can imagine, that's quite pertinent given everything that's going on. But the idea that we're currently, I'd say we're in the sort of melted stage, the sort of reforming, maybe a bit slushy, but into a new shape around emotions, because I feel like the pendulum has swung. So we've gone from not talking about feelings, particularly young men, and we know that's really damaging. It tends to manifest in anger, in criminal behaviours, in addictions, in suicide. You know, those are real issues for young men. So we've gone from not talking, but now we've kind of swung to just being clinical. So now I think there's quite a fear still around. We're still in fear, thinking about emotions, but we've gone from not talking about them but talking about them in a very clinical sense. And I think there's this big area in the middle, which is where we all as practitioners working with young people can still make a big difference. And it's in that middle, the day-to-day communication and the way we are just with our feelings, that I think we can still make a bit of headway and lose this fear around feelings and emotions. And you know, people are very frightened of this area.
Yeah, sure. And I suppose that leads on to you mentioned some of the research that you've been doing. Can you shed a little bit of light around what studying you've done and what you've sort of drew upon that?
So this all stemmed from working with those young people, and I did it for about 10 years and had, you know, hundreds through my doors during that period. And every single one of them I'd interview before they arrived to find out what had gone on for them, because they'd always come through referrals. And they could all tell me the day that they had switched off from learning, like they decided school wasn't for them. They could tell me the weather. They could tell me everything about that moment. And I held that in my mind. And then when I got to St. Mary's and really wanted to think, how can I make a big sort of difference at this? I went back to that and thought, well, where does that, why does that have such resonance to them? And this is just as applicable in football as in anywhere else. It's the idea that we decide something's not for us, or we decide something about ourselves. And so my research was really exploring, why do we do that? Where does that come from? So it's all about how emotions inform our learner identity. And I interviewed football coaches, rugby coaches and teachers, all these people that were engaged in learning and who worked with young people. But actually, I interviewed them about their own learner identity, and I looked to see where the changes had come and where that had formed. And what was fascinating to me coming out of that and all the sort of literature I had to read around that is that there appears to be, if you follow the theories that I am using in this, which are neuroscience and embodiment, the idea that we have a sort of emotional response to everything in the world around us before we start thinking. And this is where it perhaps is different to the sort of psychological things that people might have come across in podcasts and in readings about, you know, psychology, because this isn't mind over matter. This is actually, we have a kind of gut reaction to things before we start thinking about them. And in sport, if you think about it, I think for all this sort of terminology and neuroscience things, this is just common sense, because I think we all know this. We know that the minute you're in an experience, so say you're going to an away venue that you have an emotional reaction to that. You have an emotional reaction before your mind kicks in, and that has a physiological reaction. And the way that physiological reaction happens dictates, I describe it to the young people or to anyone, it's like it just sends your imagination off in a particular genre of film. So if you went there and you were brilliant last time and you had an amazing game, when you think about that place and the way you'll feel about it is phenomenal, it'll be a great. But if you had a nightmare, then that genre, you'll be seeing The Shining, you know, it'll be a horrific film that starts playing in your head. And so it's the fact that we have this sort of pre-thought response, and that then triggers everything else and then triggers our imagination, and then we kind of become that. And if that plays out over time, so if that's associated with, you know, say you're a goalkeeper and this becomes a problem, you know, it's a particular, if you know, associated with a particular aspect of your performance, then it can be a real issue. In the classroom, I think, again, we all know, I'm someone who would have said, I'm not good at maths. And I just made my mind up about that at some point. It can't be true. It's not a truth. It's just that I decided I wasn't. And I could tell you exactly why and when that happened for me. And, you know, and I'm sure anyone listening, they can go, yeah. I do this a lot. I give talks on this a lot. And there's always someone who'll say, yeah, that was me. And they'll be able to name the teacher. And they're in their 60s sometimes, but they'll know the name of the teacher and why that subject switched off for them and things. So out of this, you know, what we realize is that it's something we make up. And if we make it up, then we can unmake it. But we're not changing our mind. We're kind of changing our feelings about it. So there is a theorist called Panksepp, and he says, you know, you can't outthink a feeling. You can only outfeel a feeling. And so that led me down another path. How do we do that? Because that's simple, but really, really hard. But actually, it's not that difficult. So the work that I do is, when I looked at the research and found how they changed their identity, it really wasn't particularly painful. It wasn't particularly reflective, which I know as coaches, that's the word we hear a lot. It was more reflection in action. So it was more that kind of reflection in action where you're just, give yourself permission to try something new, try it, you know, try and think that you feel, you know, try and approach something with the openness that you could feel differently about it, and have a go. And you know, people were able to change the way that they felt about themselves in association with a particular part of learning. There were other things that were really important, and this is probably the most important part for coaches, that someone had to support them in that. So someone had to unconditionally stand beside them in that kind of mentor role, so this is the kind of thing I do, and allow them to make that decision and change their learning identity or their identity as a player. So that someone had to give them the permission. And I think that as coaches and as teachers, I know certainly as a teacher, I'm very guilty of identifying what someone should become and taking control of that process, like trying to manage that with them. I think that school kind of makes that happen. And I think probably traditional coaching pedagogy does the same.
Yeah.
But actually, if you allow someone to take a bit of control over that process, it's really, that's massively empowering. And then just support them through it.
Fab.
And they're able to do it. But that control, I think, is quite tricky for coaches. I'm just going to say that quietly. that no one hears me say that.
And yeah, I suppose you mentioned, obviously the emotion side. And obviously sometimes there can be quite a negative association with emotion. So I suppose, how have you conquered that in your experience, especially working in a football environment? Because as you said, emotions are a natural part of life. Everyone feels emotions daily across most things that you come across. There's an emotional response. So how do you sort of manage that and help young people understand it's actually okay to have an emotional response, and it's okay actually if you're upset about something, or it's okay if you're a bit annoyed about something, because that's normal? Shed a little bit of light on that.
That's pivotal. And I think the first thing is that you're right. It's especially in, I think, to be honest, in sport across the board, it's ironic to me, because everybody talks about the love of the game, everybody talks about the passion, but nobody wants to talk about the other feelings that are associated with it. So I think it is about just creating a culture where emotions are just accepted, that people become, and I think as coaches and as professionals working with young people in sport, we can model that. It is really about our comfort, but I don't think that's easy. And I don't think it's easy. And I don't think I can, honestly, as a female, tell a group of male coaches how to talk about emotions. I think that is, we have different languages. I've studied the sort of history of emotions in this country, which is very funny, because we didn't used to be like this. We used to be known as the sort of land of hugs and kisses. We were this quite debauched culture where everybody had a great time and everybody was all really open about their emotions. And then around the time of the European revolutions, they decided, oh no, because if you let people have feelings, they might have a revolution, they might revolt like the French did. Mm. So they changed the music and the art, and they created the stiff upper lip.
Wow.
And it is really interesting to go back and look at. And I say this because I think it's really important that there's an awareness that the way we feel about emotions, it hasn't just happened. And it's not a biological impulse. It's been done to us. Mm. So the culture around emotions has been created to make the expression of them, particularly for men, not appropriate. So women were allowed to talk about feelings, because they were going to bring up the children, but men weren't. And partly because that's the control over the more dominant, the sort of physically dominant gender. If you're trying to control a revolution, that's what you're possibly going to try and to do. So historically, there is a massive culture around emotions that makes it very difficult for people to talk about them. And it is changing, as we said, but I don't think it's changing as fast in sport as it possibly is in other areas. Sure. So it isn't easy to get people to become comfortable with that. But I think that's something we have to individually do. And the more we all individually do that, the more it will change the culture overall.
And I suppose if you're a coach and, I don't know, you've got a player that's maybe had an emotional response to losing the game or to being subbed, or, perhaps they haven't done as well as they wanted at training. There's obviously a whole variety of emotions you'll see from when you're working with young people. I mean, what support or advice would you give to coaches, if they're working with someone that's particularly outwardly emotional? And, because sometimes you sense that coaches and particularly in football, that we try and quash those emotions. We try and make those children or those young people conform and kind of suppress their, and don't really acknowledge it at times. We could kind of say, no, come on, you've got to get on with it. Just get up, get this go. You know, it's always trying to like skip that part. So I suppose to if you're supporting coaches or you're advising coaches, what would be the best way of dealing with someone that maybe is in quite an emotional state?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is that you can't suppress an emotion. What you do is you swallow it down and it comes through in other ways. So if you tell a player to, you know, to chill out, stop being so angry, they will just carry on being really angry and punch someone. And that's when it escalates, or they'll walk off the pitch. But they will also not play very well. So the most important thing for you and that coach, for that young person to feel okay, and for them to perform, to be able to enjoy the game. And that will in follow that they'll have a performance that, that makes them happy. So it's actually getting them to the young person needs to just accept the feeling that's going on. So the more we just accept our feelings and that they're happening, the less fierce they become. So physiologically, a feeling is 90 seconds. After that, it's our imagination that kicks in. So if a coach is able to distract a player, to acknowledge it, so it's not dismissing it, so it's not about denial or suppression, but acknowledging, yeah, you know, hearing that player say, I feel, blah, 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 and then saying, yeah, I understand that, and then distract them. So you're not negating what they're saying, you're acknowledging it, but then you can distract them so that their imagination doesn't then spiral off and they make it worse. And we all know we do that. So you get that first 90 seconds when there'll be a load of chemicals going off, of, you know, adrenaline, or and then your imagination kicks in, and that's what the spiraling, and we want to stop that. So distraction, but also a really quick thing if a player's angry is to get them to look after someone else on the pitch. So get them to support someone else, because social connection produces other chemicals that cannot, well, that override adrenaline, basically. So so it's a really quick thing, as well as if someone's feeling sort of nervous as well, getting them to just to call out for another player and check in with them, or, you know, to say to them, yeah, no, I completely understand you feel like that, but so-and-so over there, you know, they're just having a really nightmare game. Can you just go and cheer them up? Go and do something. You will completely change what's going on for that player on the inside, and then their behaviour will change on the outside. But that acceptance is really important, because the worst thing about feelings is it's actually the fear of them that's the hard bit. Once we feel them, I always say to the boys, and it makes more sense to them, it's like wind. If you hold it in, it's just painful. You've just got to let the feeling out.
That's great. That's some brilliant advice. There's some really good strategies there. And I suppose in terms of coaches, you know, particularly on a match day, sometimes coaches can get drawn into the emotions of a match day. And that can affect their behaviours, you know, when working with players. So I suppose when for coaches, the first step really to developing yourself as a coach is understanding self and understanding how you are as a coach, how you are as a person, but how you deal with pressure and so forth. So, you know, what kind of things would you support or advise coaches to do, you know, if they're feeling emotional or starting to feel that their behaviours are changing because of a particular situation? What can they do to, not allow those emotions to affect the young people that they're working with?
Is to acknowledge it, and also to be slightly, you know, to acknowledge it in yourself. Don't get involved in a fight against how you're feeling. To acknowledge it, to express how you're feeling. And this is, again, this is not easy. I'm not saying it's easy, but it is physiologically what will simply make a massive difference. You don't have to do that. I think people feel vulnerable. That's the biggest issue. So a coach or someone who's used to a position of authority, there is historically a vulnerability associated with talking about how you feel. Certainly if you're feeling upset, but you're fine about anger, but not if you're feeling upset. So I think as far as you are comfortable to talk, to acknowledge how you're feeling, to actually say, you know, oh, even if you're just having a rough day, because the truth is, I certainly know this is true in teaching, the only times you really lose your temper are when you're feeling bad about other things. It's never really about the young people. It's usually about something else that's going on, and you're a bit raw and you're a bit tired. All of those things are going on. So actually, I always advise my training teachers as well, just say, I'm really tired today and I'm having a rough day, before you even get into this, the position where it can escalate. In the heat of a game, I think it's actually worth reflecting on, you know, whether you do get riled and angry and why. If you are getting really angry and it isn't just that you're responding to, you know, the excitement and things, then I think that there's some, you know, look at that. That is something to think about. But I think it's about modeling your feelings where you feel appropriate. There is a method, and I'm sort of, I mean, there is a method that I call the clearing, and you can do this in your own head. So if you do feel that you get too invested and you get too wound up, it's something you can just do inside your head, or you can do it verbally, where you just say the fact, your opinion, your feelings about something and what you need. And what it does is, and it really helps people who are not used to expressing their feelings or acknowledging them, to clear up what's going on. So the fact is just the data. The opinion is where you do the storytelling, but it's the feeling, and it is being able to recognize in yourself the feeling and acknowledge that. And I know that's really uncomfortable for lots of people, but the more comfortable you get with that, the more you'll be able to communicate with young people. They are more comfortable talking about their feelings than a grown 40-year-old coach at the side of a pitch. I know that. An 11-year-old will very easily tell you how he's feeling.
And that's
as they get older.
100%. And when you're looking at emotions in sport and in football, you know, I mean, what from your work really, what emotions tend to be the most common ones that come out? You know, is there, does it vary, or is there particular emotions that you think, right, well, I see lots of coaches that are getting really frustrated and really angry on the sidelines. You know, is it, have you come across anything that similar? Sort of,
yeah. Fear is the biggest in sport across the board. So part of my job is also to train people to work, do my role in other organizations. And we talk about this in the training that we do. It's fear. You know, fear is massive in sport. It's fear of loss of the goal, fear of deselection, fear as a coach of being, you know, you're held to account at the most senior level in sport. You are, your position is tenuous. You are held to account for your results. You can go in a minute. There is such a lack of stability, the commitment that's expected. There's a huge investment and very little stability from all parties. So whether you are a grassroots coach or the England coach, it's exactly the same. You know, there is, because there's everyone's an expert. So you're constantly being critiqued by everybody, and working with young footballers, you know, they have to build up a resilience to now social media, which is, you know, awful for them. But that's, I'm sure that's true for a grassroots coach as well, because everyone will take to Twitter and give their opinion. So you've suddenly got all of this on you. And then, because the sadness of a loss, I think that can be managed. I think sport is accepted. It's about this, you know, that's a moment. I think people move on from that. So no, it's fear. It is, you know, sport is rife with it, and it's used to drive people to greater success. So it's actually part of a coach's toolkit.
Yeah. And I suppose, have you, in your experience then, come across any organisations or environments which tackle fear in the right way? You know, or what advice would you give to coaches that are trying to remove as much fear from the environment as they possibly can? Or is it just something that's always going to be there?
I think the nature of sport is fearful. That's the point. You are going to win or lose. So I don't think it's about removing it. I think it's about stretching the comfort zone to encompass it. So that's the work that I do, for instance, with players. And so I do work around and I feed this back to the coaches, and we have a really open communication at Fulham, and it's fantastic. Coaches are amazing there, and I will talk to them about a fear that a player might have had an injury, and so has a fear of a particular tackle. You know, they're really worried about their left ankle, and they've told me about these moves. So what the coaches will do then is they will put that player in that into situation. I will talk to the player, and the player will work with the coaches to go into situations that help them to become comfortable again with that. So you're actually building up resilience to the things that people fear the most. There's no point in turning away from them. You need to lean in towards that, but you need to do that with that support. So it's the person there, because we spoke before about that change model and the idea that transforming their identity. So they've now become someone who's scared of something, and now you want they want to move towards something else, and another response. So you actually train for fear, but you do it really incrementally. The player has control, so it's not unethical. You don't just throw them. It's not like teaching someone to swim by throwing them in, which is what happened to my sister, and she didn't learn until she was sort of much later. So it's not that kind of brutal, but you do allow that comfort zone to grow. And there's something called your homeostasis, and that's a theorist called Damasio, who's a neuroscientist. But your homeostasis is your equilibrium, your comfort zone. And he believes that that's our entire purpose in living, is to sustain and retain our homeostasis. So taking someone out of their comfort zone just puts them in fight or flight. So we don't want that. We don't want to throw them in to the deep end. But what we want to do is get that comfort zone to stretch. And play allows you to do that. And so sport's the best way for that, because it's actually playing with different situations and alternatives that allow us to stretch our emotional comfort. So it allows us to change that emotional response that I was talking about earlier. So when you were little and you beat up your siblings or your friends, and you know that point where you're like holding them down and you think, no, I should stop now. That's sort of that playing to get to the edge of what you should be doing, and emotionally and sort of about in terms of how we feel. And then so we can do that in training. So you don't ignore it, and you don't try and cut it out. In actual fact, to become I work with people who are training Olympians and who are coaching Olympians, and they have to be willing to go above and beyond, anything most of us would imagine. So you're really helping them to become, stronger.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things, obviously as a coach, you can almost in control of that. You're in control of the environment a lot of the time. And one of the things I've sort of really been tuning into and listening to a few people is actually our role as coaches is to give the kids problems, not answers, and actually give them those challenges, create competitions, give them things that are going to cause them things, the real life situations they're going to come across, not in football, but away from football too, but you're doing it in a safe environment. And then you're there just providing them that support. And I suppose for those coaches that are working with younger players, that's probably even more paramount, because developing and working those children, those younger age groups where they can be exposed to those things, is only going to help set them up as they progress through. So just really on that, I mean, in terms of the understanding children, if you're working with younger children's way, if you're working with young adults, what kind of difference between the two? I suppose I know there's probably a lot, but could you sort of summarize really the difference in
the language, and there's some things, to be honest, it's exactly the same process whether you're four or whether you're 70. And I've done this process I've talked about with those same age groups. I just think the openness decreases. So I think a group of 9-year-olds, you'll have a lot, you can have a really rich conversation actually about, right, and we're going to, we're going to look at areas that you might, where do you experience fear on a pitch? Here, they'll fantastically tell you. And you can get them to create, situations. We want you to challenge each other so that you can face those and, gain a greater sense of confidence in those situations. They'll do that. You ask the same of a group of 13-year-olds, do you have any situations that you feel, no, I am amazing, no, because they're so frightened of deselection and of being, and I mean that at any level, they're frightened then of showing a weakness, because that's what they see this as. So, I'm very aware I'm sort of this person that they can come to and say these things to, because I'm not part of that process. So, it's far more difficult to get those older teenagers to be able to, or any teenager, to be able to discuss this. So that, again, is about fostering, where you don't say, do any of you have these? It would be name one. Mm. And then there's, assume there is one. And then they have to come up with something that they want to improve. And so you kind of have to, you can't leave it open or they'll just deny it. I've done some sessions this week and last week on wellbeing with the under 16s and the under 11s. So all the teams under 16 and under 11. And when I asked them, to the under 16s, to give themselves like a score of how they're feeling, they all just give me 8s and 9s. When I ask the under 11s, they just tell me, in the chat online on Zoom. So it's more about being specific and making it okay that there are things to be afraid of, and that every player is, and perhaps, drawing on such stories and drawing on professional players who have said that. So giving them role models and being the role model where it's okay to find things frightening. It is frightening because they're putting themselves into a position that involves bravery. And I think if we phrase it that different way, in which situations do you have to be brave on the pitch? You might get a better answer than in which situations are you frightened on the pitch? It's just language, really.
And I suppose that links to the importance for coaches to build those relationships with the people that they're working with, and making sure you find time asking how the day was, how was school, and trying to build that connection. So that hopefully, you know, if you're in a situation where maybe you need to have a more honest conversation or you need to share some stuff, they're more comfortable to be able to do that. And as you know, as you've alluded to, probably 8 and 9 year olds a bit more forthcoming than what sort of teenagers are as well. So obviously we're now in a lockdown period again. I'm just really intrigued to know, because obviously we've almost nearly a year now, just kind of to get your thoughts really on the types of things that this may cause in terms of how this will affect our young people that we're working with, and what kind of the ramifications may be from this. So when coaches go back to returning to training with their players, the sorts of things they may need to be aware of and may need to consider when putting sessions on, organising games and all the rest of it. I don't know if you've got any thoughts or any ideas around that.
Yeah, I just know when we came out of the last lockdown, we did a kind of audit of what players had been up to. I think that's really important to give them a voice. So they will all, you know, they will have done the stuff. They've had to manage their own fitness and well-being, and it's honouring that. So they may have, you know, tried a different training routine and just finding out what they've done and sort of listening to it and thinking, well, we could incorporate a bit of that. Because also you might learn. You know, you might learn something about things that they've done, and it tells you about that player. So I think honouring the change that they may have put in place themselves, obviously that's going to be really different for different kids because of the different access they'll have had to parks, gardens, and things like that. So it's also being, you know, it is about doing an audit really of where you're at, where everybody's at, and then going from that point and giving them a say in it, because they are, if we go back to that model of the ice cubes, you are going to be reforming your ice cube. And, you know, I think this is true of all organisations. There's going to have to be a reconsideration of loyalty and of building that culture again of the club. So it's an opportunity, I'd say, an opportunity where also, you know, it's particularly in the area of well-being, where we give everybody else a bit of a voice. And maybe the club looks at, well, who are we now? What do we want to be? Because I think every coach, you know, at home as well, will have been listening to different things. I mean, there's been 30,000 podcasts on every area of coaching, so they'll have loads of ideas. And I think, but what an opportunity to really look at it with the members of the club and the players, and actually say, right, well, who are we, and who do we want to be going forward? Because also, certainly at elite level, athletes suddenly had all this time, and some of them probably quite liked that. They got to see people they hadn't seen for a while, and coaches got to do the same. So I think there's also been a rebalance maybe. And so looking at, yeah, what does this club look like? Don't be wrong. I know boys just want to play football, and girls out there, they just want to play football. So I know that they just want to get back to their sport, but it's just maybe an opportunity. I think that there is obviously also going to be areas of grief and loss for people. There will be lots of players across the whole country, girls and boys, who have lost people in their family. It's thousands, you know, it's going to have affected. There'll be coaches who are in the same position. And I think it's being aware that people are coming back together and they're different. There'll also be children and young people who are now in quite extreme poverty. So it's also maybe looking at from a practical level, looking at your team and thinking about what you have in place to make sure every player can come back. Because football boots may be off the budget for people, and it wasn't an issue before. And it'll be quite surprising, I think, the number of people that won't be able to afford things. So I think there are practical implications. I think that there are the emotional implications, and making sure that that's in place. I think being aware, having as much information as possible. So I think that being aware of what's in your area, even. I think just having a list of different organisations that if something came up, you could signpost someone onto would be really useful, because you're also standing on the touchline with mums and dads and carers and people that, and that's life's changed for all of them. And you, whether you like it or not, I think you're looked up to as a leader in that role. And therefore, really arm yourself with as much information as makes you feel comfortable so that you don't feel you have to provide all the answers, but you can point people in the direction of other people. Because it might as well, you know, in some places, and you might be in the community a really important leader that you don't realise. And so, yeah, I think that's important. I think it's just listening and watching and seeing to begin with. That when I say an audit of where people are at, a lot of the time that just means listening and watching and seeing where everybody is before you move forward.
Fantastic, some great advice there. And yeah, I think there's some real good points in there. And I suppose if you're a coach and maybe you haven't got the resource of a Fulham or, you know, or a professional organisation, but, you know, may have come across some things where actually, well, I'm not necessarily an expert in this area. You know, have you got any advice of where coaches could potentially signpost families or children if there's any situations that they come across in terms of grief or noticeable changes in behaviour where actually they maybe need some additional support?
In terms of organisations and things, I mean, I think the best place is a local directory. So there are obviously national helplines that you can access and things. But I think that the best thing is probably local, to look at it at a local level and to just build a little list that you have, even if you just have it in your, you know, a little list in your phone rather than, because it's just different. And because there's so many different situations that people might be into. But if this is an area that you do feel you would like to know more about, because there's also an element that coaches will have thought about wellbeing more than they've ever thought about before, because we all are during lockdown and we're all having to manage that. And so just in terms of them sort of, I've lost my train of thought.
That's okay.
Completely. So just the local places that they can go to, but they'll be thinking more about that. So they also may have, you know, just come across things. But if they are really interested, then maybe they might want to also look at doing something like the mental health qualification. It just gives you processes and things that you can follow and actually can make people feel a bit more secure about what they're doing. It's a couple of days. I'm not saying it provides all the answers. It's something I went and did, but it certainly gives you the security of knowing how to signpost. I think you're right. That in itself, the phrasing of how do you give people numbers and things, can be a bit awkward. So that, you know, just getting some training in that might help.
But I suppose one of the last things I really want to finish on today is, once they're back in, I know you've done a lot of work around the emotion, how emotions can affect learning. So I kind of just want to delve in a little bit deeper into that. So what impact do emotions have on learning, and what sorts of things do coaches need to consider around that?
Yeah, so the idea is, in terms of the fact that it's more of our learner identity, and the reason that's important is because we can do cartwheels in the air as a coach, as a teacher, where we try and get someone to take on board what we're trying to help them to develop. But if they don't believe that they can, then it doesn't matter what we do, they're never going to get there. So the emotions have an impact just on that. Is this something I can do? Is this something I'm able to do? And actually how much someone puts themselves into doing it, having a go. Yeah, because if people have a go, most people can learn everything. It's that first having a go that it stops. So it's about, it's about understanding that there's fluidity in that identity, and that you can, you know, it's that you can, even if you thought you couldn't, you can. But that goes really deep into this emotion. So the best thing a coach can do is allow the players to have some control over what kind of player they want to be. So rather, and this I think is difficult, I say this like it's easy, but I know this goes against quite a lot of perhaps coaching pedagogy in some ways. I'm not an expert, so that might be wrong as well. But the fact that you allow that player, so I do an exercise with players where they literally do a little jigsaw of the kind of player that they want to be, the kind of player that they are, and then they work out what they need to do to get to this player that they want to be. That sense of control is everything. Because if I tell you, you need to do this, you as a grown up, if I said to you, Russ, right, you need to, even about this podcast, say what you need to do this podcast, you need to do this, this, and this. Now, your heckles may be going up on your neck right now thinking, why are you telling me this? Why are you telling me that? So you've got this, you know, someone telling you you can do something is difficult even when you do believe you can. If you just tell someone and they believe they can't, you're just meeting a rock and a rock together. So it's allowing that, by allowing the players to say, well, this is the kind of player I want to be. You give them that control over the process, and then they get, they have the comfort to have a go and try and become it. So it's a really different culture shift in how we go about helping players to develop and people to develop. And I know it goes against a hierarchical, normal sort of authoritative position where the coach knows best.
Yeah, and I think roles of coaches are to facilitate. We almost want to just be redundant as coaches. You know, we're there to support and help. We're not there necessarily to lead in that more traditional sense. And I think obviously the traditional coach likes control and likes order, but actually we should revel in chaos. And I think as we return into a period where children have potentially missed an awful lot of football, it's really important that we give them an opportunity to establish their own identities again. And actually how we can create an environment to do that, I think, is going to be really important. And that's through giving them lots of opportunities to play and practice and giving them a say, as you've alluded to as well, Fiona. I think that's going to be really important too.
You can allow them as well to understand sort of that metacognition, so the idea that this is the process of what they're doing. So, because I think sometimes people are frightened of the chaos and sort of the exploratory nature of that, because they feel like it's just mess and that they're not, there's not going to be an outcome. So I think it can feel more secure as a coach or a teacher to give some sort of help around the how to. So like I say, having tools in place. So even if your players just focus on, right, get three areas of your current identity as a player that you, or pre-lockdown identity as a player and your post-lockdown. So three areas that you want to focus on, you tell me, and then you can build this idea of your team again. And you're sort of giving, so giving them again some specific questioning that will really help them to focus on what they need to do. Because there's also kids out there who'll be like, what? Identity, what? So you want to give them, yeah, as a structure for it, and to sort of guide that chaos through, really, so that you get to the other end. And just being, yeah, and just going, enjoy it, enjoy that process. To me, all learning is play and is fun, wherever it is. It's just got to be fun. And I think we can lose that. And if we make it, the more fun we make it, the better for them. The thing that came through in the research that I did on people changing their identity, so football coaches, rugby coaches, because you know, I interviewed about four rugby coaches in it, was that they loved the process of change. They found it so empowering. It made them love what they did even more. There was just sheer enjoyment in this realization that they could do something they didn't think they could before, and that they were, you know, they loved it. So it can only make your players happier and better, is what I'd say.
Fantastic. And I think, yeah, one of the quotes that I've probably really resonated with me during this is, in adversity, there's opportunity. And I think obviously with the adversity that individuals and people are facing, there is an opportunity now to help change and make your environment or your club or your program even better once things return. And obviously, as you mentioned, you know, our role as coaches, you know, we can have a massive impact on young people and communities. So I think it's a really exciting time in a lot of ways for coaches, because you've now got a period where you can really reflect upon how you were working previously and sort of have a real clear idea around, this is what we want to work towards together when we return to. So yeah, it was some fantastic stuff. And so really, Fiona, thank you so much for joining us. Really enjoyable talking with you, and you know, some fantastic advice. I think it was something that I was really intrigued by, because it's not really an area as a coach, going through coaching qualifications and courses, you never really get to talk about this side. It's not something you're really too understanding of. You know, you don't really build that understanding around what does my work do in terms of the emotions and feelings of young people, but how can I best support them on that too? And obviously, I think probably more so now than ever, that's going to be more and more paramount, more of a need for that. So, you know, thank you so much for joining us and for your advice and support. If anyone wants to reach out to you, is there anywhere that they could contact you or anything that they can do if you want to get some more information from you at all?
They can send me an email. That's absolutely fine. My email address is just fiona.wilson@stmarys.ac.uk. It's probably the easiest. I have a full in my back. I have about three and I can't remember them all.
Great stuff, and we'll include that on the podcast. So for anyone that's been listening in, that, you know, wants to follow up or reach out, please let us know. And likewise, if you've done any work or you know, show any things that you're doing with your club, then, you know, obviously feel free to share with us as too. It'd be really interesting to see how everyone's working within the context that they've got in their own environment. So yeah, thank you so much for joining us, Fiona.
Thank you very much
Hello everyone, it's Stuart here from Football DNA. Thank you for listening to our latest podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and gained some knowledge. Make sure you check out our website, www.footballdna.co.uk, for all your coaching or player development needs. We have over 800 videos on the site covering every section of the game. We have outfield and goalkeeping content from professional coaches on video, along with sports science and nutrition videos for players to become better off the pitch. The ultimate platform for coach and player development. Take care and all the best. Stuart.